I was gambling in Havana. I took a little risk.
Yeah.
Send lawyers, guns, and money. Get me out of this. I'm the innocent bystander. And somehow I got stuck. Between the rock and the hard place. And I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down on my luck. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Send lawyers, guns, and money.
We'll save the guns and money for a future show, but the talk is all about lawyers today. As we welcome Christine Brammer-Moogley, who is not only a practicing Wausau attorney, but who is also the new president of the Wisconsin Association for Justice, an organization that used to be, until very recently, called the Wisconsin Academy for Trial Lawyers. Let's talk about Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Chris, you brought them up in the last segment. They're a statewide business organization, and they have pushed to protect companies from what they call junk lawsuits. They say our state's poor legal climate is hurting businesses and cutting the number of jobs in our state.
You know, it's the Wisconsin Manufacturers have a number of members throughout the state, and they do good for each other, but they're misleading the people of Wisconsin when they say that we have a poor climate in this state. You know, by the National Chamber of Commerce does a study every year, and they look at the climate across the country for lawsuits, and they rank the states. And in the year 2006, Wisconsin was ranked at 23rd in the nation. And we had jumped down from 16th, where we were the year before. And when that happened in 2006, the National Chamber of Commerce had a press conference in Madison and said, you know, the Wisconsin courts are in terrible shape, and we've got to do something about it. And so everyone was sort of alarmed and thought, well, Wisconsin court system isn't doing very well for business. Well, what happened last year was the same group rated Wisconsin, and we went from 23rd to 10th, all the way up to 10th best in the nation in terms of climate for business, for doing business in terms of lawsuit abuse. And what happened? Well, WMC and the National Chamber were quiet about it. They didn't even put this new study up on their website. They didn't even publicize it.
Wouldn't you do that if you wanted to attract new business to the state and let them know that chances are they weren't going to get sued if they moved here?
Well, you know, wouldn't you think so, Glenn? And we questioned that. And finally, they did put, without any fanfare, the new study up on their website. But the fact is that people in Wisconsin need to know that in our state, lawsuit abuse is certainly not something that we're concerned about. In fact, the same study not only ranks the legal system and the climate for lawsuit, but they also rank the judiciary. And they look at how do our judges compare to judges across the country. And these rankings aren't done by trial lawyers, believe me. They're done by CEOs and by corporate lawyers. And these lawyers rated, and these CEOs rated Wisconsin 7th in the nation best for our judges' impartiality. Our judges were in the top 12 for competence, the top 10 for predictability, and the top 3 for fairness. So when we look at our system, if WMC is going to say that our system is broken or that we're not doing well, they're not reflecting the study of the National Chamber and members across the nation and across our state who ranked our judges and ranked our system.
For those of you who are listening, what do you think of the opinions of Christine Brammer-Moogley? Do you agree? Do you disagree? We invite you to call in at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742 as we talk about the influence of trial lawyers on our legal system and our political system. And Wisconsin Manufacturers is just one group that is often weighs in on the Supreme Court races. There was a lot of money spent on the last Supreme Court race between Annette Ziegler and Linda Clifford, and now the race between incumbent Lewis Butler and Burnett County Circuit Judge Michael Gableman. Both sides, again, sides that are typically classified as conservative, other sides that are classified as liberal, are again raising and spending a lot of money in a Supreme Court race. Is this healthy for a democracy?
Well, it isn't healthy for Wisconsin. You know, the last race was a nightmare for all of us that care. And, you know, all the lawyers in the state that were watching this, the race unfold last year, were just horrified by what we were seeing. And over $3 million were spent by outside interests, well in excess of any number that we had ever seen in the history of our state's judicial races. And so we were hopeful that this time this wouldn't happen. And yet we see that it's beginning again. As soon as the presidential primary was over, interest groups from the outside came on with ads on both sides. And so, you know, the bill that's now been passed by the Senate called Impartial Justice, which was a bill that was signed on by all seven justices of our Supreme Court now sitting. All of them approve this bill and approve working towards
changing
the system.
And that would include Annette Ziegler, the newest justice?
Yeah, even she signed on to this bill because she went through that race and she understood how terrible it was for her as well. It was a race that was...
And she was asked overtly political questions, and she seemed genuinely upset that she had to answer them.
Well, you know, right now the judges aren't allowed to give their opinions. There's arguments that they should be allowed to give their personal opinions, but they are not, and they don't.
And
do
if
that
they
in
can't
the
give
the
their
race.
Political opinions, then why should they be involved in a political race?
Well, you know, people have questioned this issue, and I think it's a very important question, Glenn, about the electability of judges, or should we just have all our judges appointed?
On a federal level, the president appoints nominees to the Supreme Court, and then the Senate has to say thumbs up or thumbs down. Why can't we do that in the state of Wisconsin?
In the state of Wisconsin, we've looked at that. And when our Constitution was written over 100 years ago, there were constitutional conventions convened. And they talked about this very issue. And the first constitutional convention actually failed on this point. They could not reach agreement as to whether the judges should be elected or appointed. And so the next constitutional convention came forward, and it was agreed then that our judges would be elected, so that they would be answerable to the electorate. You know, people think that if you appoint judges, that solves all the problems. And if you think about it, if you were realistic about it, don't you think that if there were promises to be made, they'd be made for an appointment just as much as they would be made in an election? And an election and an appointment can both be influenced. So it wasn't about that. It was about giving the people the right to speak. And that's what our Constitution stands for.
So you think this new Senate bill, the Impartial Justice Bill, which probably won't get approved by the Assembly because they're not going to consider it, you think this would somehow take care of the amount of money and political influence that's been directed towards Supreme Court races?
Well, I think it goes a long way to helping. You know, this bill says during a primary, these candidates will sign on and they will accept public funding only. And the amount of money they get from the public, the government would be $100,000 for the primary and $300,000 for the general election. Now, that's really an important thing because, you know, if you take a judge who has been in the public sector his whole life, dedicated to the public good, like Justice Butler, for instance, who was a public defender. He went through University of Wisconsin after getting a scholarship to Lawrence. He was a man that, sort of like our friend Barack Obama, who came out of Chicago out of a meager background, and was Justice Butler was seen by a teacher in the schools in the South Side as a promising young brilliant kid. He got a scholarship to
South Side of Chicago.
Yeah, South Side of Chicago. He got a scholarship to Lawrence, a place where there weren't many black young men, and certainly not something within his culture, and he excelled there. He did so well, he got into the University of Wisconsin at Madison Law School, one of the finest law schools in the nation. And he did well there. And instead of going out and taking a job where he'd make a lot of money, he dedicated his life to the system, and he became a public defender.
Are the trial lawyers backing Butler?
The trial lawyers will make no endorsement. There are many trial lawyers across the state. Many of the lawyers across the state, whether they're trial lawyers or not, are endorsing Justice Butler.
Now, Michael Gableman is casting himself as a law and order judge. He's backed by a lot of sheriffs and police organizations. Does this imply that Lewis Butler is somehow soft on crime?
Well, he might be trying to imply that, but it's totally misleading for anyone running for the state Supreme Court to say that they are a law and order judge. If people understand what our court does, they'd understand that it's just totally misleading to say that I'm a law and order judge. The Supreme Court doesn't put people in jail. The Supreme Court reviews decisions of the lower courts, and the Supreme Court makes decisions as to whether the proper procedures were followed. You know, Justice Butler, although he was a public defender, if you look at his record while on the court, he has voted 98% of the time with Judge Prosser. Now, if he were going to be someone who was really on the left side of things,
Judge Prosser is he's got a reputation as a conservative.
Justice Prosser, Justice. Rather, is a conservative, and we look at his record, and we look at Justice Butler's record. If those two are voting together most of the time, it certainly isn't because Justice Butler is a big lefty.
So what you're talking about is they'd each get $100,000?
They get $100,000 for the primary. They get $300,000 for the general. And my point is this. If you're going to have people that are public servants being able to run for these offices, we've got to give them public financing. They don't have personal wealth.
But would it be constitutional to tell organizations like the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce that they can't spend money on ads? Wouldn't it violate their First Amendment rights? Don't they have a right to make their opinions on issues and on candidates known?
And they do have that right, and this bill recognizes that right. This bill does not stop that. There's nothing in this bill that's going to stop outside interest groups from saying their piece.
Then how are you going to keep the money out of the race?
Well, you don't keep the money out of the race, but what you do is you give the candidate who's being attacked by outside interests a fair chance to answer, so that each one of the candidates would be given up to $1.2 million in matching funds so that they could put forward a response to any attacks that come to them.
Is Lewis Butler an activist judge? We hear that term thrown out a lot, and usually, you know, it is a recurring political issue in national and state elections. In national elections, Republican presidential candidates typically say that they'll appoint strict constructionists who will follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench. And I guess my question is it possible to have a conservative activist judge as well as a liberal activist judge?
Well, absolutely. I think that if we look at what is an activist judge, and an activist judge is someone who takes the law beyond what the legislature has said it is and does something beyond what the law is written to do, the most activist judge that we can probably look to in our nation's history was probably Justice Rehnquist, who was probably one of the most conservative jurists that we've ever seen. And if you look at his record, he was more activist than anyone else. So what do we do when we say someone's an activist or not? It's almost like it's implied that an activist is bad and someone that is a strict constructionist is good. You know, we've got a wonderful justice on our Supreme Court, Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson. And most lawyers in our state really think she revere her because she's so brilliant and she's done such wonderful things for our state. She wrote a very interesting decision a couple years ago called the Ferdon decision. And this decision dealt with overturning malpractice caps for damages for people who are injured as a result of malpractice. And it said that caps on malpractice awards were unconstitutional. And Justice Abrahamson, in her decision, she indicated that, you know, when we overturn something, when we look at legislation, it's the role of the judiciary. It's the role of the judiciary to look at legislation and determine it constitutional or not. And that is not being an activist. That's doing what we are bound to do as jurists. And that's not being an activist, although there would be those who would say that that was an activist decision.
If you're a strict constructionist and you're looking at the Constitution of the United States, shouldn't you be a strict constructionist about the Bill of Rights and say that maybe it's unconstitutional to arrest people without charges and throw them into prison without letting them know what offenses that they're facing, which is something that this government has been doing over the past 8 years? How about freedom of speech, freedom of press, not making reporters reveal their sources? It would seem that there are a variety of things that if you were a strict constructionist and the Constitution meant something, maybe the Bill of Rights of the Constitution should mean exactly what it says.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, and people use these terms to put forward their arguments in the way they want them put forward. You know, what we have to look at is what is really being required of our judges. what are they to do? And they are really to look at the precedent, the laws that have come before, and apply that law to the factual situation before them. And being an activist or not being an activist isn't really, it's a code word to give someone an idea that this judge is going to vote the way you think that they should vote. But, you know, there's been plenty of decisions that have been lauded by the conservative side that have been absolutely activist. So we have to be very careful of these terms when we're talking about our jurists and our Supreme Court. That just isn't something that we have to consider when we're looking at the court. Instead, you should look at what are the real qualities of the judge. You know, someone asked me what do you look for in a Supreme Court justice, and I think that one of the things we want to say is a justice has to have courage, and a justice has to have the opportunity to look at the decisions and look at the law and apply it in a courageous way. And sometimes that means going against what you might think in terms of your political background, but you know that it's right in terms of the law. So courage is something that's very important to a Supreme Court justice.
Christine Bremer Moogley, she is the new president of the Wisconsin Association for Justice, formerly the Wisconsin Academy of Trial Lawyers. Do you agree with what she's saying or disagree? If you want to weigh in, those phone numbers, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
You get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life, why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatow. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Christine Bremer Moogley, the president of the Wisconsin Association for Justice, with us for about another 7 minutes here. And again, you've got a fairly extensive list of agenda items for the state legislature to continue. We've discussed some of them. Let's talk about Senate Bill 126, which is involves a 3-year statute of limitations, and you would make those apply to UW hospitals and clinics. As well as other organizations. Explain that to us.
I didn't add that to the list of bills that passed the Senate, and that's also one that's passed the Senate, we're proud to say, and with some bipartisan support. This is a bill that's very interesting because it changes the law so that people who are injured in a hospital by a physician who's employed by the University of Wisconsin or through the state of Wisconsin now have only 6 months to bring a claim. And you have to understand that when people are injured in a medical malpractice situation, it takes them quite a while just even to figure out what happened to them. And to not only figure out what happened to them, but get their records, hire an attorney, and get something filed within 6 months is almost impossible. And so this bill changes that and allows people to have more time, the same time that you would have if your physician wasn't employed by the state. And so it's a bill that gives access, and it's a bill about fairness. You know, a lot of times people in Madison, for instance, they go to a different medical clinic, and sometimes their physicians are actually employed by the state, and they don't even know that. And so it takes time for people to figure out what happened. It takes time to figure out who your physician works for truly. And so this bill just gives people the time they need. So it's another bill about access to justice.
You've written a column in the Wausau Daily Herald supporting Senate Bill 138. This is the Family Justice Bill. Tell us what that is and why it's important to you.
Well, the Family Justice Bill is really important to the people of Wisconsin, and this is a bill that is also a bill about access, because it says that individuals who have family members who have been who die as a result of medical negligence have the same right to bring their case in the courts as anyone else, even if the family member were killed in a motor vehicle accident, for instance. It's hard to believe this, but right now, if your parent who is divorced or widowed dies as a result of medical negligence, there is no cause of action in Wisconsin against the person that caused that death. So if your mother, for instance, was in the hospital and died on the operating table as a result of medical negligence, and there are no dependents and no surviving spouse, there is absolutely no accountability by those health care providers.
You could sue if it was your child under 17, correct?
Right. It's if you have a, the bill also goes to the issue that a parent is not allowed to sue for an adult child's death. So there are many instances that these families have come forward where their children have died as a result of medical negligence. A young man, 24 years old, who was riding his bike down in Madison, had a head injury in an accident, taken to the hospital. They didn't do the appropriate tests. He was discharged home. He died in his father's arms. But there was no cause of action because the man wasn't married and had no children. There could be no claim for that child.
And again, this seems as though people are opposing it because they don't want to further burden the doctors and the medical establishment because our health care costs are high enough.
Well, you know, there have been two arguments that have been raised against it. Someone said, well, we've got to just draw the line somewhere. Well, it's easy to say draw the line when it's someone else. But if it was your mother or your 19-year-old child that died due to medical negligence, it certainly wouldn't be what you were saying. And our system isn't based on unequal access. We want everyone to have access to the courts. And so this bill prevents that kind of thing from happening. You know, if you were driving to the hospital and a doctor hit you and caused injury such that you actually died in an auto accident, an auto collision, there would be a claim against that doctor, against the liability insurance for the doctor. But if that same doctor were to commit negligence in the hospital that led to a death, there would be no claim. So this bill is to prevent that from happening and to clean it up. This bill has bipartisan support, I'm proud to say, because people just recognize it's just not fair. You know, the other argument against this bill is that people were worried that it would affect the patient's compensation fund that was taken by the legislature to help balance the budget last
right.
year. Well, this bill doesn't affect that at all because a wrongful death claim in Wisconsin is capped at $350,000.
Chris, we're down to our last minute here, and before we go, I want you to weigh in on how you think you can turn around the negative opinion so many people have of trial lawyers and how you can raise the public standard, I guess, or the public awareness of what trial lawyers are, what they do, and how you can keep them from being used as whipping boys and scapegoats in future political campaigns, because I don't see a stop to it.
Well, you know, I think that what we have to do is just get out the message of who we really are. You know, there are many people in our organization, and our organization is the largest voluntary statewide organization for lawyers. You know, it's made up of people who are family members, who serve on boards of directors for Boys and Girls Clubs, who sit on school boards, who are coaches for Little League, and who volunteer in their churches and in the communities. And we just need people to recognize that these lawyers are dedicated to what they do, and they are there for you. If there's a problem and you have no one else to turn to and no funds to pay a lawyer, a trial lawyer is there to help you. And so we're hopeful that people recognize the sacrifice and the commitment that these trial lawyers have made and how the good that they do has changed our state. And so I think people will recognize that. We just need to get the word out.
Thanks, Chris. Christine Bremer-Moogley, the president of the Wisconsin Association for Justice, partner of the Bremer and Trollope Law Firm with offices in Wausau, Minocqua, Stevens Point, Marshfield, and Antigo. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler, John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Lawyers, Guns, and Money was performed by Warren Zevon. Next week on Route 51, we look at the Peace Corps as we talk to local volunteers who served overseas and examine the role the organization plays in America's international relations and reputation. That's it for us. Thanks for riding with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.
I'm the innocent bystander.
stuck between the rock and the hard place, and I'm down on my luck. Yes, I'm down on my luck. Send lawyers, guns, and money. Send lawyers, guns, and money.
We'll save the guns and money for a future show, but the talk is all about lawyers today. As we welcome Christine Bramer-Moogley, who is not only a practicing Wausau attorney, but who is also the new president of the Wisconsin Association for Justice, an organization that used to be, until very recently, called the Wisconsin Academy for Trial Lawyers. Let's talk about Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce. Chris, you brought them up in the last segment. They're a statewide business organization, and they have pushed to protect companies from what they call junk lawsuits. They say our state's poor legal climate is hurting businesses and cutting the number of jobs in our state.
You know, it's the Wisconsin Manufacturers have a number of members throughout the state, and they do good for each other, but they're misleading the people of Wisconsin when they say that we have a poor climate in this state. You know, by the National Chamber of Commerce does a study every year, and they look at the climate across the country for lawsuits, and they rank the states. And in the year 2006, Wisconsin was ranked at 23rd in the nation, and we had jumped down from 16th, where we were the year before. And when that happened in 2006, the National Chamber of Commerce had a press conference in Madison and said, you know, the Wisconsin courts are in terrible shape, and we've got to do something about it. And so everyone was sort of alarmed and thought, well, Wisconsin court system isn't doing very well for business. Well, what happened last year was the same group rated Wisconsin, and we went from 23rd to 10th, all the way up to 10th best in the nation in terms of climate for business, for doing business in terms of lawsuit abuse. And what happened? Well, WMC and the National Chamber were quiet about it. They didn't even put this new study up on their website. They didn't even publicize it.
Wouldn't you do that if you wanted to attract new business to the state and let them know that chances are they weren't going to get sued if they moved here?
Well, you know, wouldn't you think so, Glenn? And we questioned that. And finally, they did put, without any fanfare, the new study up on their website. But the fact is that people in Wisconsin need to know that in our state, lawsuit abuse is certainly not something that we're concerned about. In fact, the same study not only ranks the legal system and the climate for lawsuits, but they also rank the judiciary. And they look at how do our judges compare to judges across the country. And these rankings aren't done by trial lawyers, believe me. They're done by CEOs and by corporate lawyers. And these lawyers rated, and these CEOs rated Wisconsin 7th in the nation best for our judges' impartiality. Our judges were in the top 12 for competence, the top 10 for predictability, and the top 3 for fairness. So when we look at our system, if WMC is going to say that our system is broken or that we're not doing well, they're not reflecting the study of the National Chamber and members across the nation and across our state who ranked our judges and ranked our system.
For those of you who are listening, what do you think of the opinions of Christine Bramer-Moogley? Do you agree? Do you disagree? We invite you to call in at 261-6371, 261-6371, or 1-800-780-9742. That's 780-9742 as we talk about the influence of trial lawyers on our legal system and our political system. And Wisconsin Manufacturers is just one group that is often weighs in on the Supreme Court races. There was a lot of money spent on the last Supreme Court race between Annette Ziegler and Linda Clifford, and now the race between incumbent Lewis Butler and Burnett County Circuit Judge Michael Gableman. both sides, again, sides that are typically classified as conservative, other sides that are classified as liberal, are again raising and spending a lot of money in a Supreme Court race. Is this healthy for a democracy?
Well, it isn't healthy for Wisconsin. You know, the last race was a nightmare for all of us that care. And, you know, all the lawyers in the state that were watching this, the race unfold last year, were just horrified by what we were seeing. And over $3 million were spent by outside interests, well in excess of any number that we had ever seen in the history of our state's judicial races. And so we were hopeful that this time this wouldn't happen. And yet we see that it's beginning again. As soon as the presidential primary was over, interest groups from the outside came on with ads on both sides. And so, you know, the bill that's now been passed by the Senate called Impartial Justice, which was a bill that was signed on by all seven justices of our Supreme Court now sitting. All of them approve this bill and approve working towards
changing
the system.
And that would include Annette Ziegler, the newest justice?
Yeah,
even
she signed on to this bill because she went through that race and she understood how terrible it was for her as well. It was a race that was...
And she was asked overtly political questions, and she seemed genuinely upset that she had to answer them.
Well, you know, right now the judges aren't allowed to give their opinions. There's arguments that they should be allowed to give their personal opinions, but they are not, and they don't.
And
do
if
that
they
in
can't
the
give their
the
political opinions, then why should they be involved in a political race?
Well, you know, people have questioned this issue, and I think it's a very important question, Glenn, about the electability of judges, or should we just have all our judges appointed?
On a federal level, the president appoints nominees to the Supreme Court, and then the Senate has to say thumbs up or thumbs down. Why can't we do that in the state of Wisconsin?
In the state of Wisconsin, we've looked at that. And when our Constitution was written over 100 years ago, there were constitutional conventions convened. And they talked about this very issue. And the first constitutional convention actually failed on this point. They could not reach agreement as to whether the judges should be elected or appointed. And so the next constitutional convention came forward, and it was agreed then that our judges would be elected so that they would be answerable to the electorate. You know, people think that if you appoint judges, that solves all the problems. And if you think about it, if you were realistic about it, don't you think that if there were promises to be made, they'd be made for an appointment just as much as they would be made in an election? And an election and an appointment can both be influenced. So it wasn't about that. It was about giving the people the right to speak. And that's what our constitutional stands for.
So you think this new Senate bill, the Impartial Justice Bill, which probably won't get approved by the Assembly because they're not going to consider it, you think this would somehow take care of the amount of money and political influence that's been directed towards Supreme Court races?
Well, I think it goes a long way to helping. You know, this bill says during a primary, these candidates will sign on and they will accept public funding only. And the amount of money they get from the public, the government, would be $100,000 for the primary and $300,000 for the general election. Now, that's really an important thing because, you know, if you take a judge who has been in the public sector his whole life, dedicated to the public good, like Justice Butler, for instance, who was a public defender. He went through University of Wisconsin after getting a scholarship to Lawrence. He was a man that, sort of like our friend Barack Obama, who came out of Chicago out of a meager background, and was Justice Butler was seen by a teacher in the schools in the South Side as a promising young brilliant kid. He got a scholarship to
South Side of Chicago.
Yeah, South Side of Chicago. He got a scholarship to Lawrence, a place where there weren't many black young men, and certainly not something within his culture, and he excelled there. He did so well, he got into the University of Wisconsin at Madison Law School, one of the finest law schools in the nation. And he did well there. And instead of going out and taking a job where he'd make a lot of money, he dedicated his life to the system, and he became a public defender.
Are the trial lawyers backing Butler?
The trial lawyers will make no endorsement. There are many trial lawyers across the state. Many of the lawyers across the state, whether they're trial lawyers or not, are endorsing Justice Butler.
Now, Michael Gableman is casting himself as a law and order judge. He's backed by a lot of sheriffs and police organizations. Does this imply that Lewis Butler is somehow soft on crime?
Well, he might be trying to imply that, but it's totally misleading for anyone running for the state Supreme Court to say that they are a law and order judge. If people understand what our court does, they'd understand that it's just totally misleading to say that I'm a law and order judge. The Supreme Court doesn't put people in jail. The Supreme Court reviews decisions of the lower courts. And the Supreme Court makes decisions as to whether the proper procedures were followed. You know, Justice Butler, although he was a public defender, if you look at his record while on the court, he has voted 98% of the time with Judge Prosser. Now, if he were going to be someone who was really on the left side of things,
Judge Prosser is he's got a reputation as a conservative.
Justice Prosser, is a conservative, and we look at his record, and we look at Justice Butler's record. If those two are voting together most of the time, it certainly isn't because Justice Butler is a big lefty.
So what you're talking about is they'd each get $100,000?
They get $100,000 for the primary. They get $300,000 for the general. And my point is this. If you're going to have people that are public servants being able to run for these offices, we've got to give them public financing. They don't have personal wealth.
But would it be constitutional to tell organizations like the Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce that they can't spend money on ads? Wouldn't it violate their First Amendment rights? Don't they have a right to make their opinions on issues and on candidates known?
And they do have that right, and this bill recognizes that right. This bill does not stop that. There's nothing in this bill that's going to stop outside interest groups from saying their piece.
Then how are you going to keep the money out of the race?
Well, you don't keep the money out of the race, but what you do is you give the candidate who's being attacked by outside interests a fair chance to answer, so that each one of the candidates would be given up to $1.2 million in matching funds so that they could put forward a response to any attacks that come to them.
Is Lewis Butler an activist judge? We hear that term thrown out a lot, and usually, you know, it is a recurring political issue in national and state elections. In national elections, Republican presidential candidates typically say that they'll appoint strict constructionists who will follow the Constitution and not legislate from the bench. And I guess my question is it possible to have a conservative activist judge as well as a liberal activist judge?
Well, absolutely. I think that if we look at what is an activist judge, and an activist judge is someone who takes the law beyond what the legislature has said it is and does something beyond what the law is written to do, the most activist judge that we can probably look to in our nation's history was probably Justice Rehnquist, who was probably one of the most conservative jurists that we've ever seen. And if you look at his record, he was more activist than anyone else. So what do we do when we say someone's an activist or not? It's almost like it's implied that an activist is bad and someone that is a strict constructionist is good. You know, we've got a wonderful justice on our Supreme Court, Chief Justice Shirley Abrahamson. And most lawyers in our state really think she revere her because she's so brilliant and she's done such wonderful things for our state. She wrote a very interesting decision a couple years ago called the Ferdon decision. And this decision dealt with overturning malpractice caps for damages for people who were injured as a result of malpractice. And it said that caps on malpractice awards were unconstitutional. And Justice Abrahamson, in her decision, she indicated that, you know, when we overturn something, when we look at legislation, it's the role of the judiciary. It's the role of the judiciary to look at legislation and determine it constitutional or not. And that is not being an activist. That's doing what we are bound to do as jurists. And that's not being an activist, although there would be those who would say that that was an activist decision.
If you're a strict constructionist and you're looking at the Constitution of the United States, shouldn't you be a strict constructionist about the Bill of Rights and say that maybe it's unconstitutional to arrest people without charges and throw them into prison without letting them know what offenses that they're facing, which is something that this government has been doing over the past 8 years? How about freedom of speech, freedom of press, not making reporters reveal their sources? It would seem that there are a variety of things that if you were a strict constructionist and the Constitution meant something, maybe the Bill of Rights of the Constitution should mean exactly what it says.
Well, you're absolutely right. You know, and people use these terms to put forward their arguments in the way they want them put forward. You know, what we have to look at is what is really being required of our judges. What are they to do? And they are really to look at the precedent, the laws that have come before, and apply that law to the factual situation before them. And being an activist or not being an activist isn't really, it's a code word to give someone an idea that this judge is going to vote the way you think that they should vote. But, you know, there's been plenty of decisions that have been lauded by the conservative side that have been absolutely activist. So we have to be very careful of these terms when we're talking about our jurists and our Supreme Court. That just isn't something that we have to consider when we're looking at the court. Instead, you should look at what are the real qualities of the judge. You know, someone asked me what do you look for in a Supreme Court justice? And I think that one of the things we want to say is a justice has to have courage, and a justice has to have the opportunity to look at the decisions and look at the law and apply it in a courageous way. And sometimes that means going against what you might think in terms of your political background, but you know that it's right in terms of the law. So courage is something that's very important to a Supreme Court justice.
Christine Bremer-Moogley, she is the new president of the Wisconsin Association for Justice, formerly the Wisconsin Academy of Trial Lawyers. Do you agree with what she's saying or disagree? If you want to weigh in, those phone numbers, 261-6371 or 1-800-780-9742. I'm Glenn Mobrig. This is Route 51 Regional Talk Radio for North Central Wisconsin on the Ideas Network.
Your business can reach an audience like no other in Wisconsin by supporting programming on Wisconsin Public Radio. For more information about business sponsorships, call Rick Ryer at 1-800-749-3906.
You get enough jargon and double talk in the rest of your life, why would you want it with your science news? I'm Ira Flatow. Each week on Science Friday, we skip the bogus and buzzwords and don't dumb down the big issues in science, medicine, technology, and the environment. So join me on Science Friday as we discuss science sensibly. That's on Talk of the Nation from NPR News.
Christine Bremer-Moogley, the president of the Wisconsin Association for Justice, with us for about another 7 minutes here. And again, you've got a fairly extensive list of agenda items for the state legislature to continue. We've discussed some of them. Let's talk about Senate Bill 126, which is involves a 3-year statute of limitations, and you would make those apply to UW hospitals and clinics. As well as other organizations. Explain that to us.
I didn't add that to the list of bills that passed the Senate, and that's also one that's passed the Senate, we're proud to say, and with some bipartisan support. This is a bill that's very interesting because it changes the law so that people who are injured in a hospital by a physician who's employed by the University of Wisconsin or through the state of Wisconsin now have only 6 months to bring a claim. And you have to understand that when people are injured in a medical malpractice situation, it takes them quite a while just even to figure out what happened to them. And to not only figure out what happened to them, but get their records, hire an attorney, and get something filed within 6 months is almost impossible. And so this bill changes that and allows people to have more time, the same time that you would have if your physician wasn't employed by the state. And so it's a bill that gives access, and it's a bill about fairness. You know, a lot of times people in Madison, for instance, they go to a different medical clinic, and sometimes their physicians are actually employed by the state, and they don't even know that. And so it takes time for people to figure out what happened. It takes time to figure out who your physician works for truly. And so this bill just gives people the time they need. So it's another bill about access to justice.
You've written a column in the Wausau Daily Herald supporting Senate Bill 138. This is the Family Justice Bill. Tell us what that is and why it's important to you.
Well, the Family Justice Bill is really important to the people of Wisconsin. And this is a bill that is also a bill about access, because it says that individuals who have family members who have been who die as a result of medical negligence have the same right to bring their case in the courts as anyone else, even if the family member were killed in a motor vehicle accident, for instance. It's hard to believe this, but right now, if your parent who is divorced or widowed dies as a result of medical negligence, there is no cause of action in Wisconsin against the person that caused that death. So if your mother, for instance, was in the hospital and died on the operating table as a result of medical negligence, and there are no dependents and no surviving spouse, there is absolutely no accountability by those health care providers.
You could sue if it was your child under 17, correct?
Right. It's if you have a, the bill also goes to the issue that a parent is not allowed to sue for an adult child's death. So there are many instances that these families have come forward where their children have died as a result of medical negligence. A young man, 24 years old, who was riding his bike down in Madison, had a head injury in an accident, taken to the hospital. They didn't do the appropriate tests. He was discharged home. He died in his father's arms. But there was no cause of action because the man wasn't married and had no children. There could be no claim for that child.
And again, this seems as though people are opposing it because they don't want to further burden the doctors and the medical establishment because our health care costs are high enough.
Well, you know, there have been two arguments that have been raised against it. Someone said, well, we've got to just draw the line somewhere. Well, it's easy to say draw the line when it's someone else. But if it was your mother or your 19-year-old child that died due to medical negligence, it certainly wouldn't be what you were saying. And our system isn't based on unequal access. We want everyone to have access to the courts. And so this bill prevents that kind of thing from happening. You know, if you were driving to the hospital and a doctor hit you and caused injury such that you actually died in an auto accident, an auto collision, there would be a claim against that doctor, against the liability insurance for the doctor. But if that same doctor were to commit negligence in the hospital that led to a death, there would be no claim. So this bill is to prevent that from happening and to clean it up. This bill has bipartisan support, I'm proud to say, because people just recognize it's just not fair. You know, the other argument against this bill is that people were worried that it would affect the patient's compensation fund that was taken by the legislature to help balance the budget last
right.
year. Well, this bill doesn't affect that at all because a wrongful death claim in Wisconsin is capped at $350,000.
Chris, we're down to our last minute here. And before we go, I want you to weigh in on how you think you can turn around the negative opinion so many people have of trial lawyers and how you can raise the public standard, I guess, or the public awareness of what trial lawyers are, what they do, and how you can keep them from being used as whipping boys and scapegoats in future political campaigns, because I don't see a stop to it.
Well, you know, I think that what we have to do is just get out the message of who we really are. You know, there are many people in our organization, and our organization is the largest voluntary statewide organization for lawyers. It's made up of people who are family members, who serve on boards of directors for Boys and Girls Clubs, who sit on school boards, who are coaches for Little League, and who volunteer in their churches and in the communities. And we just need people to recognize that these lawyers are dedicated to what they do, and they are there for you. If there's a problem and you have no one else to turn to and no funds to pay a lawyer, a trial lawyer is there to help you. And so we're hopeful that people recognize the sacrifice and the commitment that these trial lawyers have made and how the good that they do has changed our state. And so I think people will recognize that. We just need to get the word out.
Thanks, Chris. Christine Bremer-Moogley, the president of the Wisconsin Association for Justice, partner of the Bremer and Trollope Law Firm with offices in Wausau, Minocqua, Stevens Point, Marshfield, and Antigo. I'm Glenn Moberg of Wisconsin Public Radio. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producer, Kelson Quisler, John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Lawyers, Guns, and Money was performed by Warren Zevon. Next week on Route 51, we look at the Peace Corps as we talk to local volunteers who served overseas and examine the role the organization plays in America's international relations and reputation. That's it for us. Thanks for riding with us today. Until next week, we're heading out of town.